Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a terrific service department that backs it up from routine to difficult, all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. To say I look forward to this segment every time we do it would be an incredible understatement. It's time to bring back the great one himself from the coast, and that is Tony Knopp. Tony, welcome back, my good friend.
It's been too long. How are you guys doing?
Doing really well. How about you?
I'm good. There's a lot to talk about. It's crazy.
There is a lot to talk about.
We have 14 team CFPs now. Yeah. We spent our whole life just trying to get more than two, and now we've got 14.
That's what I said to Jim Delaney when they went to four. I said, a lot of people are talking about expansion beyond this. I said, I remember how hard it was for you to get two. And he started laughing. He says, you and I can continue this conversation because you understand. I said, yes.
We spent our whole lives, a couple of games of the centuries, trying to figure out who the real champion was, right? And now, right. Now it's evolving.
Well, so let's talk about that for a moment, because the discussion point to go to 14 is for them to have three automatic bids, Big Ten, three automatic bids, SEC. And it doesn't mean that they can't get four teams in.
Right.
Because that would be in the at-large. But two for the Big 12 and two for the ACC, then one group of five. Tony, I'm going
to schedule. And one for Notre Dame, which is so ridiculous because they have to finish in the top 14. And you're telling me that if they're at 16, the human error is not going to move them up to 14?
It's amazing.
Good for Notre Dame.
Yeah, no, exactly. All right, and I'm glad you brought that up. But I'm going through USC's schedule today for the upcoming season. and I'm looking at Florida State's schedule for the upcoming season. And you're telling me that if USC finishes fourth, they don't get an automatic bid, but Florida State finishes second, they do. And I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me because I went through the schedules.
And you know, that's the big problem. I think I read yesterday coming out of the meeting that strength of schedule is the biggest concern now because, you know, you have programs out there. I'm a USC grad. One of the little known things about USC is I think there's only a handful of programs who have never played a football subdivision team. They've only played, you know, Division One, you know, football championship, the top division, and that's what SC is, and Notre Dame is a lot of that too. And I think the concern here is if it's going to become an expanded playoff, top three get in, guaranteed bid, now you're going to start manipulating your schedule and saying the non-conference games don't matter then, because all that matters is for me to qualify as a top three out of my conference, right? And so I don't need to play the out of conference game anymore. And if you think about it, it's actually the complete opposite driver for like a Notre Dame. So right. If you're USC, you've been playing Notre Dame for 100 years. Now you're looking at your schedule and saying, okay, we're traveling across the country multiple times a year. Our number one priority to extend into the postseason, which has significant financial benefits, but also has financial benefits beyond what they get paid by the CFP. I think I was reading the other day that every time a team makes the CFP admission enrollment applications go up, I think it was like 22%.
Yep.
Right. So it impacts the entire university beyond the athletic department. So when we look at that and we say, okay, you participate in the CFP, you're making $20 million extra or whatever, that seems like a lot of money, but you're also getting tens of millions, if not 100 million in exposure for your university, and your applications are going up, your donations are going up. And I read something else that said that it was in the Wall Street Journal, it said it was something like every two or three times a team wins a major bowl game, a new building gets built on their campus by that money. And so the concern for guys like you and I, who really love that you went to Auburn last year to kick off the season,
yep.
What's the incentive to do that now?
Right.
Well, right?
To give everybody a cue, the next to last game of the season for Florida State is Charleston Southern.
Right. Right. And Alabama's been kind of doing this for a little while. Mm-hmm. Alabama, their schedule, you look at it, they tend to put cupcakes in between their big games. And somehow they've gotten away with this, right? So they'll play an SEC game on the road, they'll play an SEC game at home. Let's say they're playing Auburn, and then they play Tennessee, and then they play, you know, whatever, the Steve Jones accredited right. University of the Mountains, right?
Oh, and it's like they'll play Mercer. They've played Mercer before.
Right. They have. And sometimes they'll play like Troy, which is an okay school, but it's not an SEC school. Meanwhile, you have teams in the Big Ten, like you're talking about with USC and others, where, you know, Penn State, I remember 2 years ago, you guys had a murderer's row where it was something like Michigan, Iowa, Ohio State, Sparty.
Yep.
In order, and three of them were on the road.
Right.
Right? That matters. And now if you're looking at calendaring games, you're maybe not going to want to go USC versus LSU in Las Vegas, which is what they did, which is crazy.
Right.
Because, I mean, looking at it right now, I think USC has maybe the hardest schedule I've ever seen coming up.
They play at Michigan. They host Penn State. They got to play Washington. I went through it today, and Notre Dame's still on there. It made me step back and go, wow, that was something.
I think they've got to already. They've got to regret it. There's no way they don't regret it. They open with LSU. They have LSU, Michigan, LSU at Michigan, at Penn State, at Washington, at UCLA, at Notre Dame. And the only school on there that's not a major football program is Utah State, in between LSU and at Michigan. And that's to the point that we're talking about. That's fantastic for college football. We want those games. But if you're going to give auto bids to top three finishers, and you're not going to include strength of schedule, and you have to figure out how to include strength of schedule, that's going to be incredibly difficult for the game going forward. Because in the end, it's just going to be, I just need to finish high enough in my division, so to speak, and then we can get into this 14-team playoff. And that's, you know, I would prefer to see these. I love these non-conference games. I think it's one of the funnest parts of college football, is getting to go somewhere new, experience the town, getting to have that entire, you know, it's great. Everybody loves it. I mean, there's people who haven't been to Happy Valley. I've had the blessing of being there. It's a unique experience that it would be a shame if, you know, Auburn wasn't coming there, or, you know, Florida State never came to town, or, you know, that sort of thing. That is the concern about this on the money side.
No question. And by the way, just one minor correction. Penn State goes to your place. They go.
That's right.
They go to Coliseum.
Penn State at SC October 12th.
Look, I don't want you to avoid the Friday night party and all the things.
It is bookmarked. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Yeah. got to have you over.
But you guys have a quarterback, right? We've got a new guy who's played one game. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see how Miller Moss is. Drew Aller's, you know, coming with a new offensive coach. He's, spirits are high. We'll see what USC has for you.
We did a lot of talk about the Pac-12 and, of course, the dissolution of the Pac-12 as to how it ended up playing out in the end, in terms of, you know, looking at it. Is it good for college football? No, but, I mean, I will say this. My job got more exciting. I mean, it really did. I mean, seriously, my job got more exciting. I mean, going to the Coliseum, USC, right? Washington coming here, basketball, USC, UCLA, combo road trip. trip over to Tony's place. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to slip that in.
Yeah. You're coming.
But, I mean, my job got more exciting. But if you're a coach, I mean, the job's got more difficult.
A lot more difficult. So I'm friends with a couple of coaches out here that are in the other sports, basketball, girls soccer, and the like. And they're very concerned about the they're very concerned about competitive balance, and it's because of the NIL. So NIL on the West Coast is nowhere close to what it is on the East Coast and in the Midwest. And so I was talking to, even I was talking to Andy Enfield, the coach at USC, and he was saying that, and he is a competitor, he's ready to compete with everybody. But he was saying that, you know, Illinois' NIL collective is $3 million in for the basketball team. Right. And for us, that's difficult to match at USC. And I think what a lot of times listeners don't understand when looking at how we're building a roster, and with this massive court decision last week, you're paying for everybody on your roster now. I mean, there are guys on the roster who I could throw a name out there that people wouldn't know. I mean, your listeners probably don't know the name Drew Peterson. Drew Peterson was a fringe, he was a fringe guard for the USC's basketball team, played at TCU before that. He was making $175,000 a year to play basketball at USC. And that's not enough to compete in the Big Ten when it comes to basketball, because Big Ten basketball is just a different world. And that's the big concern right now as these Pac-12 teams assimilate is, you know, one of the big arguments in recruiting had been, and there's been a lot of write-ups about this, especially since the big court case with Tennessee last week, that, you know, one of the things that they pitch is, well, you don't have to leave home, right? You can stay here if you're from Los Angeles or Fresno or whatever else, and your parents can come see you play. But now if you're going to spend half your games in the Midwest anyways, and look, I have no problem telling the truth. It's just a different world. The support system, the alumni system in the Big Ten, it's just bigger than it is at, in the Pac-12. The only team that was close was USC as far as, you know, game day experience and alumni. But when it comes to the following, we don't have anything like Wisconsin out here where you're selling out every event. You know, Penn State wrestling is incredible. We don't have that. Right. And none of the Pac-12 schools do. We have a decent following, but we don't. With that doesn't come the money. So this imbalance of competitiveness is going to be really interesting to watch because, yes, the TV money is going to start making up for this. We talked about UCLA being $106 million in the red, right? Now they're break-even, and they're going to get a big payday from the Pac or from the Big Ten. Washington and Oregon aren't. I think they're only getting a half share. Correct me if I'm wrong. You might know this better. They're only getting a half share for a few years, correct?
Right. They're getting a half share for the next 6 years.
That's significant. 6 years is a long time. And you've got to try to find a way with your alumni to make up for that. And Seattle and Eugene just don't have that booster support. I mean, Eugene has Uncle Phil, but it's difficult. And so it's going to be really, really interesting to watch how recruiting plays out over the next 2 to 3 years. Because now that whole offer that, well, you can stay in Southern California and you won't have to travel too much, that's over, right? You're going to Rutgers in November. Enjoy the flight, right?
I can see the fans excited now. Rutgers is in town. All right. and by the way, on the point on Illinois with NIL with basketball, they lost in here last week, so they didn't get their money's worth. All right, so
I know, I saw it.
That's
it was a big win.
That was a huge win.
My buddy Dave went out to the game, flew out and went.
Dave should have come over and said hi. By the way, make sure he knows.
I'll make sure he does. I had dinner with him last night. I'll be sure to mention it.
No, please mention it to him. We've talked about first of all, the TV deal is. I don't think it's been mentioned, but I don't think it's been completely finalized. But they're talking about giving $700 million more than the previous deal, which is between $1.3 and $1.4 billion a year. It actually is $118 million per playoff game under the 12-team format, which is $8 million more than an NFL playoff game, which is $110.
I mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it's $8 billion, right? It's like 6 years, almost $8 billion.
Yeah.
And I think they extended it for almost 10 years. I think it extends until like 2032 or 2033, right?
They have 2 years left in the current one, and the extension's an additional six. So there's 8 years to go before the whole thing runs out.
And I'm going to kick a dead horse just because I can and it's right in front of me. That's still before the ACC's deal expires.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly, which is 2036.
It's crazy. Oh, man, what are they doing? But that's the point. What we were talking about earlier and why you were so correct in bringing it up is, like, if there's going to be this much money going into the CFP, and there's been a lot of talk about, hey, the CFP is eventually just going to take over for the NCAA. They're going to be the overriding, overruling organization, and the money is going to drive it. Then again, what incentive do you have to schedule a difficult schedule? Right. The NCAA is running into a lot of problems. First of all, this lawsuit that just got ruled on last week, where you can just openly pay players now. I think they've been doing it anyways, but now they've got the court behind them saying, look, just go pay players on the recruiting trail. It's fine.
Kentucky basketball just lost its advantage.
Right? I think I read the other day that recruiting expenses are up 26%, while income to athletic departments is only up 13%. So the haves and the have-nots are going to continue to... it's going to continue to differentiate, right? Like we talked a couple of years ago about super programs and then smaller programs. And that's just the evolution of college sports. I mean, most people don't realize that, you know, from 1920 to 1955, the NIT tournament was the one that really decided the national champion. The NCAA was kind of a secondary tournament, right? And, you know, the 1944 Utah Utes, they lost in the NCAA, or they lost in the... in one of the tournaments and then went and won the other one. They were a fill-in for somebody who got sick.
Right.
So I think that's the way we're headed. I think we're just headed towards, you know, mega conferences that are going to be governed by the CFP. Because, you know, some of these rules are getting a little bit crazy, too. The starting quarterback for Utah Utes this year is 24 years old right now.
Cam Rising.
So he'll be 25. Yeah, when the season... He's a local boy. He's from Newbury Park here. Michael Penix, you guys know him well. I remember that controversial play with him and COVID with you guys. He was 24 years old at the game last year. And they had a ruling yesterday that there's going to be an 8-year player for basketball. I don't remember what university. It's like his fifth school that he's on.
And there's one, at Miami, football, tight end.
Whew. I mean, look, that's okay, but who's going to govern this? And the problem is the NCAA is losing a lot of their... a lot of their power and their jurisdiction over this. The states are stripping it away. But at the same time, if the CFP is a standalone organization and financial organization, then they can govern themselves with that, right? Yes, it'll end up in court, but they can say, hey, look, we don't need seventh-year seniors playing in the CFP championship game, right? Like, I think Blake Corum is 23 or 24 years old, right?
He is.
That's significant, right? Most people graduate high school when they're 18. So... Yeah. You know, these are things that the CFP is going to have to figure out, and it just doesn't seem like they're getting a lot of backing from the court system, right? I mean, this Tennessee thing did not go the way they wanted it to go. EA went and tried to offer some money, $600 to participate in the game for every player. And, you know, that headline was a little bit of clickbait because there's still NIL deals that can be done outside of that. But
that's
now we're seeing, like, Jackson Dart, the quarterback for Ole Miss, just signed a private jet deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing amateur about that. I mean, he's got a private jet now.
Right.
Right? Which, good for him. He should, for how much money he's bringing the organization. But it's going too fast, Steve. It's just they let the horses out of the barn, and they didn't put up the fencing, and it's just everywhere right now, and it is crazy. And it's exactly what you talked about earlier. Like, you know, you look at this year, you look at people with, you know, a cupcake schedule, and then you look at people without one, and there's not really anything you can do about it.
Right. There's no incentive. And that's different. The whole thing is different, and that's why I think we might be headed toward collective bargaining when it's all said and done.
Oh, we're close. Probably a good thing. It's probably a good thing, right? I mean, if you have protections and rights for the coaches, for the athletic directors, for the strength trainers, for all the people that work around the organization, right, then you should have collective bargaining for the players and then also for the students that work at the team, because the teams don't go where they go without students.
That's right.
There's a lot of them, and they have very little protection, right? And they should, for an organization that they, there's plenty of money being made.
I do have to ask you one quick side question. It's about LIV Golf.
Okay.
They obviously have the gigantic star power. The PGA Tour still at least has the name behind it. Why am I sensing that this merger, which is going around in a circle, that there in some ways is LIV starting to pass out the PGA Tour despite the contracts the PGA Tour has?
You know, personal thought and then business thought on it. So I attended my first LIV event. So we had a gentleman who worked here for 7 years who was very close to us. He's family. And he got offered a position at LIV 2 years ago. And most people couldn't take that job 2 years ago because it was too poisonous, right? It was seen as selling out.
Right.
But he was so well embedded in us, and we loved him so much that I just said, hey, look, you can go do it, because if it doesn't work out, you can come back here. You have a safety net that other people don't.
Right.
So go try it. See if this is going to take off. And so we've been in contact quite a bit about what's happened between the PGA Tour and LIV. You know, at some of the early tournaments, the PGA Tour was paying to fly protesters to the LIV tournaments, like things like that.
Right.
What's been really interesting to watch has been, you know, the sentiment has changed amongst the players. We've seen Rory backtrack significantly. We've seen, you know, yesterday with Taylor Gooch, who I don't know if the listeners know, but Taylor Gooch is, he's the guy who won the LIV Tour last year, and he's now not eligible for the Masters. And people are starting to say, I think he probably should be. I mean, he just won in a season with, you know, DJ and all these other monsters on tour with him, and he beat all of them. And you know, a lot of these LIV guys finished in the top 10 last year at the Masters. The events are starting to sell a lot better. I think there's some things that they have to figure out. But, Steve, I went to an event myself, and I think it's the future of golf. I didn't think that before I went in Las Vegas at the Super Bowl, but it's 5 hours. There's music. The kids are going to like this better, period. Mm-hmm. It is fun. There's always something going on. There's you know, an environment. On a certain hole, they have walk-up music, and they announce the guys like it's a baseball, and they play the music while the guys are hitting their shots into the par threes. And the problem the PGA Tour is running into is, like, their whole argument was, and we love the PGA Tour, but the problem was their whole argument was, you're taking blood money, right? This is sport washing. But now the PGA Tour is flirting with taking money from the PIF. How is that any different?
It isn't.
Right? If your claim is you're using blood money, so now we're going to go get blood money and fight you back, well, you just took that card off the table. And the hard part about the tour is a lot of the things that they scoffed at early, you know, changes to payouts, changes to format, that sort of thing, they're now adapting. And so we've seen this before. You and I are old enough. We saw this with the USFL.
Yes.
Right? This is not news. Like, this, you know, there's things that came up in the ABA that the NBA adopted.
Yeah.
I just don't know, Steve. It's they've got better players now. And what they've done is they basically said, here's the PGA Tour's model. Our model is going to be more like F1/soccer.
Yep.
We're just going to pay for the superstars, and we're going to build the team thing. They're very aggressive about it. I don't get it, but look, I'm not their target audience. But I can tell you from being at the events and from seeing what's happening with some of these events that it is sticking, and they are around, and they're not going anywhere. And I'm curious to see Anthony Kim play again. I don't know about you, but
yes,
I want to see what he's got left.
Yep, me too. And that's and Gooch made over $40 million last year. He never would have made that in the PGA Tour. Never.
He made 7.3 on the PGA Tour.
Yep.
Right? In the end, I get it. If the argument is, I can't play for blood money, and okay, I will never judge anybody for that. That's fair, right? But the PGA Tour has 23 major sponsors who do significant business in Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
So what's the difference? It's the same money. From what I know, they're not taking the money from those sponsors and putting it in a side pool and saying, Steve, if you don't feel comfortable taking this money, we're just going to take it out of the prize pool, right? You can't get a little bit pregnant here, right? You're either doing it or you're not, right? And so I hate to say it, but, you know, probably shouldn't admit it, but when LIV first started, and our Troy, who was our guy, hadn't moved over there yet. We had a meeting with our executive team, and I sat down and I said, hey, we should really figure out what we're going to do about Liv. Because eventually this is going to come into our purview. And one of our generals laughed and he said, you're a little late, Tony. We signed a contract with him 2 months ago to do this eventually. I was like, okay. Well, I guess we're doing business with him. So, but it's a great observation by you, because you're not the only one seeing it, and the players are seeing it too.
My friend, always, always a pleasure. We'll talk again next month, because I can't keep going like 2-3 months without talking to you.
Please. Absolutely. Please.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Have a great week.
The great Tony Knopp.